I may have to do a little editing for time here. You also have to open this thing up. Been doing a series on the Bible as, you know, and just a kind of way of impressing us with the wisdom of God, just how much, you know, information he gives us and direction and guidance in so many different aspects of our life. Hopefully we've shown that when Peter says, we've seen that his divine power is granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness. Yeah, it's, you know, the more you go through it, and it's amazing that it's all in this little bitty book. The subject I was going to cover was business. Okay? And I thought, well, anybody that's run a business or, you know, isn't working probably would shut down, you know, and feel that, you know, and go to sleep. But let me draw your attention to the word itself and what it means. We have a tendency to think of the corporate world, but when I looked it up in Webster's, all it means is endeavor or what one busies himself with. From the Middle English, the Old English, it just goes being busy. So if you ask someone, the housewife, what are you busy at? Well, raising a family. The student, what are you busy at? Well, going to school. So when we're talking about business, we're talking about anything that consumes your life, anything you're giving your energy to, you know, how do you go about it? And so with that in mind, we're going to see that God is a vital part of this. In fact, you know, if I go through the introduction real quick, that'll save us some time to get down to it. You'll notice if you got your hand out that the sections are something like, you know, God involved. Okay, we're going to hit that real quick. And then attitudes and then principles. And that's why the book is so small. Okay? One thing you can say about God, he doesn't micromanage things. That's the problem with our government. They try to micromanage. So they have all sorts of laws that come out. So many now, someone once said, it doesn't matter. Every day you probably break something. Just can't get around it. Okay? But with God, there's something else built into it. You know, he knows that a law can't cover every situation. So what he did was say, okay, here's the proper attitude to have toward others. And here's some principles that should guide you. And that's it. And actually, that's enough. He's given you a brain in order to figure these things out. So you've got everything you need in the scriptures and from God's endowment for you personally. Okay? And so this is what we need to look at. Most people are familiar with board games. This is one of the things you want to consider as we're talking about God in the mix. You may be pretty good. I pick various. Yeah, it could be a chess game. It could be involved in investments, municipal bonds, whatever. I think that's the second part here. As you get into it, but what if there was any of that? Whatever your expertise is, you know, playing games on iPod or whatever, what if that went away? What if it just went away? And one of the reasons I picked out the municipal is because it has to do with the government. What if your government failed? Everything now you know about municipal bonds, you know, or government stocks and things is absolutely worthless to you. It's like being a shoe salesman in a country where nobody wears shoes. No. What are you going to do? And God can do that. He can yank the game board out from under you so that everything you take your pride in or your arrogance from can be totally eliminated. That's on the one hand. The other hand is, you know, just knowing how God fits into things. James 4, familiar, we go through all the time. Come now, you would say, today or tomorrow I'm going to go such and such a place and spend a year and make a profit. And James says, wait a minute, look at the very bottom of it. Why don't you ought to say, if I live, then, yeah, or the Lord wills, I shall live and also do this or that. So James plugs him right into life itself. Whatever you're busy at, first of all, you better, you know, talk to God. Whatever your plans are, is God included in them? Realizing that if they're going to come to fruition, He has to be a part of it. Anything else here? In agrarian society, which is kind of written for, the farmer understands, you know, that whatever he's going to eat that day, where does it come from? God is the one that provides the seed. God is the one that provides the soil. God is the one that provides the sunshine. He is the one that provides the air, you know, the nutrients, you know, the rain. And so the farmer has to understand, the more God is involved in this, the more there's going to be an abundance. You know, in fact, even the simplest part of this, the mechanics of it, the more you sow, the more seed you put out there, the more you're going to, the more there's going to grow from it. So God says, using that same thing spiritually, and get things out there. Get as much as you can. The more you put out there spiritually, the more you're sowing, the more you're going to reap. Okay? But we also know that God is the one that's behind all that, too. Okay? From what we've just been touching on in the prophets, I mean, this is the problem, as Ron gets you into Malachi, is that the people are doing the mechanical stuff, and it's not working. You know, they go, they till the ground, they put the seed in, they expected a big harvest, and nothing happens. Why? Because they torqued God off. And so he wasn't going to have any of it. And the world has forgotten this. Or they grew up never knowing. This is insight that we need, that the world needs. And you're privy to it. And you got to get it out there. In attitudes, when one finally comprehends how important God is to the advancement of any sort of endeavor, then one will understand how important it is to advance oneself with proper attitude. Because the eye judges in our attitudes. To him, attitudes are important. You know, often we think of it, you know, we can just, you know, be whatever kind of person we want to be. Sometimes, you know, countries write it off, well, that's just the Latin blood. But God is going, no, you've got attitudes I've given to you, you've got to put them in check. You've got to learn to use them right. Okay? Your attitudes, pretty much, along with your emotions, are the wind behind the sails of whichever way you're going. You need to control them. Part of your job, you know, as a Christian is conforming your attitudes to that of God's attitudes. Learning to love what he loves, learning to hate what he hates. Attitudes are all important, you know, in many ways. And it's something you bring into something. If you just, well, let's get to some of these verses here. Talking about godliness is great gain, you know, whatever. Yeah, let's go in one place with it. Being considerate, Philippians 2. With humility, by each of you consider one another more important than yourself. Take that into the school, your classmates. You know, a lot of extracurricular at that time is getting together, working in clubs, you know, society, things to put on your resume, or in the classroom itself. You know, how do you relate to the teacher? How do you as a teacher relate to your students? Do they sense you are there to help? I mean, one of the things all the schools I've gone to, what I look for in a teacher is, are they trying to make, what I consider a good teacher, is someone who can make the hard look simple. That's teaching. Now, I've also had, you know, professors who seemed it was their job to make sure that whatever their career was or whatever the thing, you know, teaching, was an exclusive club. And so they're trying to weed out as many as possible. And that's not a teacher. So what kind of attitude do you bring into it in running a business? You have this kind of situation. I've gone into a place one time, and I stood up to the counter, and I was, you know, interested in some stuff, and I wanted to buy things. And the girl, we were the only ones in the place. And the girl behind the counter was over in the corner, and I could hear her. She was on the phone talking to her friend as if I didn't even exist. And I know she saw me. As far as she was concerned, you know, the business was there for her. I know she was just working for somebody else. She wasn't considerate of her boss. She wasn't considerate of me. And eventually I got tired and walked out. No sale. Attitudes are important. I mean, you go into some place, I was in Russia. We went into a little store. And the girl was like really, happy to see us. She said, come on in. She guided us over, what can I help you with, whatever. And Charlie said, 5 years ago, when it was more socialist in the government, and people basically, they know they got paid whether they sold anything or not. He said, then the girl behind the counter was reading a book, and when you approached her to buy something, she looked up at you like you're annoying her. This is what socialism has a tendency to implode. Capitalism has to, can only develop, our free market system can only grow with everybody having a good attitude. This is what God is trying to instill in us. Yeah, if you're raising your family, the first thing you ought to check is the kid's attitude. Make sure they don't give you any, as we put it. You're training them to give them control over their attitudes to make it so they're successful in life. business attitudes, don't try to get too fast, too far too fast. Getting rich quick. Okay? Two things come out of it. One, you will either get scammed or you'll get jailed. Okay? Just, do the job to the best of your ability, and what comes, comes. A faithful man will abound with blessings. Okay? If God's in it, you're trying to be, representing God and all this, that kind of attitude, it's just doing, what you need to do, then, he'll take care of you. But he'll punish you if you start doing it the wrong way. Work with your portion. We covered this passage 2 weeks ago or so. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare. And what are you really trying to accomplish? Are you trying to build something, which is primarily a relationship with people and with God, or are you just trying to accumulate things? Okay. You've already got a wrong attitude as to what's important. Notice this, and as far as God's concerned, we talked about the contribution this morning. And this is Paul as he's trying to, gather money to help support the needy saints in Jerusalem. And he's telling the people, basically Christianity, and people try to make this argument that Christianity is nothing more than communism, just spreading the wealth. That's not what Paul said. He says, if somebody has a need, then, hopefully you can take care of them. But God's not trying to impoverish you or rob you of what you've worked hard for. Notice, if their readiness is present, that's acceptable to God in your giving. If you really wanted to give to show your appreciation, your gratitude, but you haven't got the money, well, he tells you, just give as you prospered. If you haven't prospered, it's fine that the attitude is there. That's worth more to God than the amount of stuff. Or, Proverbs 3:9, honor the Lord from your wealth, from the first of your produce. Okay? It's honoring him. Is the attitude there? As we said this morning, give cheerfully. If the cheerfulness isn't there, keep it. God's looking for the attitude, trying to train us. As to principles, being honest, seems like the world is getting more and more corrupt. It is, trying to do anything, any kind of investments or whatever. More often than not, you really better find somebody that you can trust. Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense. Because people would rather do business with somebody who's honest. I mean, that's what you're looking for. So try to be honest yourself. Toyota used to have a great advertisement. We want to sell you your next car and your next. They slip you a lemon the first time, you're not coming back. They want to take care of things. I mean, there's been a lot of good policies out there. One time if you owned a upper-end Honda, and it needed maintenance or whatever, just give them a call. They'll come to your business, they'll pick up the car, they'll go fix the engine, lube it all, whatever, and even, you know, wash it and bring it back to your business, no charge. You know, I love the story about this guy who bought a Rolls Royce, and he was, you know, touring Europe or something like that, and the car broke down. And so he's in this little, you know, mountain village or something like that, and he got in touch with, you know, the Rolls-Royce company. He said, you know, the car's broke down, something's gone wrong with it, he's trying to, you know, we'll have somebody out there right away. And they actually flew in a mechanic with a part who came in and fixed the car and then flew out. And the guy, you know, waited a couple of months for the bill because he thought, man, it's really going to cost him. And he finally broke down and called the company and said, you know, listen, you had all the, you know, repair and the part and everything else. And he said, yeah, I haven't received a bill yet. And the guy told him, you don't understand, Rolls Royces don't break down. Okay. How much is integrity, you know, and honesty and everything else behind whatever you're putting out there, even if it, especially if it's yourself? Example here, Joseph and Daniel, two exemplary characters. I mean, Joseph starts out as a slave. Actually, you know, Daniel's a captive. But what you find in these guys is the highest form of integrity. And in fact, the Jewish people, you know, they grew up around them. You need to ask yourself, why did Joseph rise to second in power in Egypt, you know, the most powerful country at the time? And Daniel to third in power in Babylon and then in Persia? Well, the simple solution is that the guys in charge basically could trust the Jewish people and not their own. I mean, the others were too busy, you know, stabbing each other in the back, poisoning each other, you know, lying to each other and trying to get ahead, whereas the Jewish people under their God realized they had to be trustworthy, their word had to be good, you know, they had to be, you know, faithful to whatever they were doing. And, you know, they may think their God's a little weird, but who would you rather have as a neighbor or running your country? I'd hire Daniel anytime. I mean, there's things you can find that said wrong about Moses. I dare you to find anything that God or anyone says against Daniel. I mean, he's working so hard, you know, with a good work ethic and morals and everything else. Not only, you know, is he, you know, rising to power in Babylon, but when the Persians conquer and take over, they see what a good job he's doing, and they give him the same position. When has that ever happened in the history of the world? But because of the character and the nature of God's people, yeah, it happens. And I've seen it, you know, even in my own careers and the businesses I've been in. Crooked man's an abomination to the Lord, but he's intimate with the upright. Okay, we're getting attitude, we're getting principle, and we're getting God involved in these things. Have you ever, you know, just been sitting there minding your own business, and also the big, ugliest spider you've ever seen lands on your arm? Yeah. What do you do? Well, first of all, you get the willies, and then you go, I'm trying to get it off. That's an abomination. That's how God feels about the sins that we do sometimes. He doesn't want any part of it. He wants to get it away from it. That's what he does to us when we behave like that. But he's very intimate with the upright. You're trying to do a good job and you're representing God, and whatever you're involved in, he wants to be there with you. What's the hell, God? Go ahead. I'm having problems. Oh, this is nothing. Yeah, just before us. Just before I came here, I was in the, running to the car because I was a little late, and I had, you know, thrown my briefcase in the car. I had two bottles of fluid, one, you know, Gatorade, and one my water. The water dropped on the floor and it started to roll into the car. And so I went to grab it, and I had a close encounter with a rearview mirror. Still hurts. Okay. So anyway, okay. He who walks with integrity walks securely. You know, God's watching out for those that are trying to do what he says. He who perverts his ways is going to be found out. God's going to make that happen. Okay. put away from you a deceitful mouth, put you, principles that God gives us. Be accountable. You must show people that they will never be put to a disadvantage. If you're working with people, and they understand, you're never going to be, like in so many corporate rises, you're not going to undermine someone. You're not going to step on them on the way up the ladder. If they want to be petty, let them be petty. But you're not going to do that. The people under you will respect you. The people over, they should appreciate it. If they don't, go to another job. What was read, we've covered this in a sermon not too long ago. In your endeavors, keep this in mind. Not only as in the opening introduction in Ephesians, where it talks about when you work, work as unto the Lord. But Ephesians, Psalms 15, deals with this. Who is going to approach, the tent of the Almighty? Who's going to dwell with him? Okay? He only lets them in who walk in integrity, who try to do the right thing. Okay? They represent him properly among the people they relate to. Provide quality services as part of it, whatever your family, education, business, career, sports, especially in God's kingdom. Provide quality service, labor with all your might. If you got a job to do, do it the best of your ability. And that's in everything. Yeah? That's what that says, honor your creditors. This impacts your credibility and your reputation. Are you registered with the credit bureaus? What's your credit score? I don't know what mine is, but just to let you know, it's up there. when I go for a loan or something like that, they look at my credit score, oh, no problem. It won't come back to haunt you when you start doing something, when you got a good reputation out there. People rely on you. They're willing to help and work with you. Especially if you're a boss, don't withhold anything from what's due. If someone's worked for you and they deserve to be paid, pay them. Now, this was important back in biblical days when people worked hand to mouth. What they did that day, that's what fed the family that day, and only that day. So to withhold from them was actually criminal. We have a little bit, slide room nowadays, but so we get paid every week, every 2 weeks, or whatever. It's one of those things. When that comes, generally the people need the check, and that's when you be considerate of your creditors, yourself as a creditor, get out of debt. Okay. Now this is something of. The borrower becomes the lender's slave. I think we even get this in a moral sense. Yeah, probably someplace. I'm out of whatever. I think it comes up other places. But just the idea of sin. I mean, young people rail about being under somebody. They don't want to be subject to government or parents or whatever. They don't want to be told what to do. But then they'll go out in the world and give themselves over to something. You become addicted to whatever drugs out there or other things that are involved, we'll get into, and they enslave themselves. Doesn't make any sense. More comically, they don't like their parents yelling at them, but they'll go to a party or a concert and have somebody up there with a loud guitar screaming at them. But they don't like to be yelled at. Doesn't make any sense. Pick your battles. Treat employees fairly. They're extension of yourself. When the employee thinks he's not being handled right, you got a problem. All the way down. Or the customer. From biblical principles, you get the principle the customer's always right. Trying to make sure that they're happy and satisfied. More of that. Treat customers fairly, same thing. When I get down to showing partiality, you can read this stuff yourself. I want to get down to Book of Ecclesiastes in the bottom line. In Ecclesiastes chapters 2 and 3, we went through that at one point. And what it tries to do is give you a perspective beyond the little box we live in. starting like with a game board kind of concept again. The life under the sun is trying to tell you that you need to look beyond where you are. Kids in school, don't look at just, you know, well, again, I got a good grade. No, you're there to learn something. You're there to learn material that's going to help you in whatever job you're looking for out of school. You got to be able to think ahead of that. Not only with other aspects of career, you know, careers, businesses, whatever, but even God's kingdom. You know, where do you want the kingdom of God to be? This concept, now, I've been in places where they go, well, we're keeping the doors open. And places that have the mentality of, well, we're keeping the doors open, okay, generally, you know, close the doors eventually, you know, for good. The kingdom of God is a dynamic. You know, we all have to be working to it, to make it stronger, to make it grow, you know, to make it vital in society, to make it, you know, something powerful for God. If God wants it, you know, he wants to make it, and all he's got to work with is us. So the stronger we make ourselves, the more knowledgeable we make ourselves, the more attitude, you know, oriented, you know, that we make ourselves, the better the church grows out there. And we're bringing more people into a proper relationship with God, following his principles, following his attitudes. And we're looking for something beyond. What are you trying to do with all of the busyness that you're involved in? Raising a family? I mean, how many people have raised a family and it dies on them? You know, the kids become immoral, you know, do strange things. I mean, it's like, it's just for this time and they don't even make it through this time. They're not seeing beyond. Most quintessential of this is, you know, probably George Soros. You know, I've talked about him a little bit in the past. You know, he's just, he's the only really true-to-life Bond villain I know that's going, you know, living right now. This guy has meddled in more economies around the world. I mean, he was raised Jewish. He was a traitor during the World War II. He turned in his own people. He worked for the Nazis. He's an ex-Nazi, although he's Jewish. And he's built up a fortune. And the interviews that I've seen, you know, read that people had with him, he comes out, actually not intimating, but he actually thinks he is God. And he's behind a lot of the power plays in this country and Europe, you know, almost drained Asia of its economy. So this guy, you know, is on a major power play, but when he dies, he's in his 80s. What happens when he dies? Yeah, the scorpion nest that he's put together is just kind of, in fact, what God promises, the people that labor to gather this kind of wealth and stuff, you know, when they pass, it's all going to go to godly people. Maybe you ought to pray for him, you know, get more wealthy and stuff like that, because God's going to get it in the end. And what's he going to get in the end? He's laid up nothing to preserve himself before God. I mean, he's arrogant. He thinks himself powerful. Yeah, but in the end, yeah, he really hasn't understood the whole thing about life. Demonstrates how futile and empty such pursuits can be if we don't raise the family, if we don't put the business together, if we don't put the church together with the view of taking it into eternity, taking the kids with us, the grandkids, the business, you know, something left viable to work for God, that the employees also have a good spiritual basis to them. Okay, all this, you know, thinking all this thing through, you know, serving God any way we can. Personal note, you know, sometimes people just totally miss the concept of things. I was taking some martial arts lessons from Paul Vunak, and Black Belt Magazine said he's, you know, rated the 12th street fighter in the world. Now this guy, the reason they rated him, you know, kind of so high is because of the insane things he does. He actually walks down dark alleys hoping he'll get jumped. So he learns how, you know, to fight in a street situation. He's one of the few guys I know this. His hands are all, you know, mangled from all the things he's hit with them. In fact, he spent a small fortune. He told me, we're sitting around lunch. He goes, yeah, we his friend and him, bought every kind of beer bottle there was. Just because if you ever seen them, they break the beer bottles, in a bar, in the movies, and always the beer bottle, breaks perfectly, so it's got the jagged edge. Rarely do they do that. So they sent a small fortune sitting there, how to break the bottles and which bottles broke right, whatever, just so they got the right weapon in a street, in a bar fight. Now, what's interesting about this is that he also told me, as we're sitting there, because he's put out a lot of video sets and things like that, and some of them have taken off and make him a good pile of money, except his partner, lawyered up and robbed him of just about everything. So here's a guy who spends his life so he can protect himself in a street fight and save whatever couple of dollars is in his pocket. But someone, can get close enough to him in order to rip him off of just about everything to the tune of millions. Somehow he's overlooked the real concept of self-defense. Zeroed in on one thing and he's missed the bigger picture. And so many people in life do that. It's like, what is true self-defense? How about getting yourself right with God so he'll protect you in this life and also in the next? That's self-defense. In anything you're doing, what are you trying to accomplish? Take it beyond, out of the box, into eternity, and see if you're headed the right direction. I think I got one last thing here. Putting up things in heaven, providing for our own, performing with our own hands so we'll have something to share. These are all the principles that God wants us to do, thinking beyond just ourselves. And I think I got one more. Come on. Okay, the little parable of the slaves coming up, and one of them goes, okay, you gave me 2 talents, I'm giving you 2 more back. Whatever you've given me in this life to work with, I've labored to increase it for you. That's the parable. Okay. So he's showing us good servants. But what we're working for is the master's comments. Well done, good and faithful servant, enter in, to the master's house. This is what we're doing it all for. The kind of busyness we're involved in, will it get us in good relationship with God as well as everybody else? There's something here I think God is pushing for. A lot of our knowledge that we're acquiring, accumulate the kind of knowledge you can take into the next life. You accumulate the skills, the attitudes, the principles that you can carry into the next life. I got a sneaking suspicion that he's got something waiting for us. And right now, all this life is the training ground to find out who's going to be worthy enough to get the good stuff. And that's really the bottom line of this lesson. Are you really preparing yourself for eternity? Or the song says, are you prepared to meet your God? Okay. Think about that. Is there anything you need help with, anything we can do for you, prayers, baptism, whatever, let us know as we stand to sing.